Raising the Bets is brought to you by the StarQuest Production Network and is made possible by our many generous patrons. If you'd like to support the podcast, please visit sqpn.com/give. You're listening to Raising the Bets, a family podcast of pirates and penguins. We're a Catholic couple raising five kids outside of Boston. Join us as we share the joys and challenges of marriage, homeschool, and our adventures near and far as we make sense of the world and experience the best parts of our culture. I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
So, right now, I've got my headphones on to make sure that both of our voices are recording.
Yay!
Unlike last week, when I had turned off my microphone and you only heard my voice over Melanie's microphone, which
for which
I greatly apologize. They say you're never supposed to apologize and just move on, but I do want to apologize because it drives me batty when I do that. So I'm sure it drives other people batty too.
It would drive me batty.
It would. So it is Super Monday, you know, by the way, they call it that.
That's a thing.
It's a thing.
Seriously.
People like stay home from work, especially in the cities where the teams are from. So Kansas City and San Francisco people probably they had higher than normal absence from school and work.
Just because they're tired?
Yes.
They stayed up
late and partying and celebrating or crying in their beer as the case may be.
I'm guessing that's not an excused absence.
Yes. With the Patriots not being in the Super Bowl this year, I didn't really care. In fact, I didn't actually watch all of the Super Bowl, partly because I had to watch Doctor Who for recording of the podcast.
Right. We watched Doctor Who.
We watched Doctor Who together. Yes. But also, yeah, that doesn't bear talking too much about it. It was a game. There was a scandalous halftime show, and there were funny commercials that we watched today on YouTube, which is pretty much how it goes. I saw the very end of the game, and it was pretty good, and that's that. I was rooting for the losing team, the 49ers, because of Jimmy Garoppolo. Jimmy G was a Patriot, was Tom Brady's backup for a while. So
I see.
Yeah,
I know nothing of these things.
Exactly. That's why we're moving on. To the other things we did this weekend. We went on Saturday. We had an outing, which was very nice.
It was. It was a very nice, spontaneous outing that almost didn't happen because it was a little bit too spontaneous for some of our less spontaneous, spontaneity-loving children.
Our non-spontaneous offspring, which actually implies something that I'm not sure we want to imply.
I suppose. I feel for them. I really do, because I myself...
You're not always... spontaneous.
I like to be spontaneous when I've had like an idea on the back burner and I suddenly like, this is the time for it. But when it's on somebody else's back burner and I don't know about it, that's a totally different kettle of fish.
You like being spontaneous when you've had a chance to think about it for a while.
Right, but it looks like spontaneity to other people. Right?
Right. So the spontaneous outing was we went to this place that's 20 minutes away, which is really close.
Had never heard of it before.
Right. I'd actually heard about it last year when I was trying to find things to do with my scouts, but I didn't. Never went beyond that, but it's called the South Shore Natural Science Center, and it is a very small little nonprofit that has some exhibits that showcase the ecosystem of the South Shore, which is an area south of Boston.
Right.
The unique nomenclature for the Boston area. The North Shore is everything that's sort of north, directly north and northeast of Boston, and South Shore is everything that's directly south and southeast of Boston toward the Cape, and Cape Cod is something else. So even though we're South Shore, even though we're like 20 minutes from the ocean, it's still called South Shore.
Yeah, we're not on the shore, people. We're really not.
We're not. Closer than some. But anyway, this place has something called the Eco Zone, which is inside, and it was inspired by Jeff Corwin from Animal Planet, apparently. But they're part of the South Shore YMCA. I don't know if you caught that.
I did notice that. I was wondering what the YMCA on the door was about.
Yeah, they're part of the YMCA. So if you're a member of the South Shore YMCA, you get free admission. The indoor exhibit stuff was okay. It cost $5 a head. It was actually pretty cheap. In fact, it cost $4.50 for you and me because we have AAA membership.
Woohoo!
Woohoo! It would have been nice if we all got 50 cents off, but, you know, whatever. So... It was showing its age a little bit.
A little bit.
It was a little bit well-loved. But there were some interesting things in there. There was the exhibit on... I found the exhibit on the kettle ponds, the quaking bogs, really interesting.
I did not actually stop and look at that one.
They had a really nice little explanation of what a quaking bog is and how they form.
Like a lot of the nature centers I've seen, they they had lots of animals, like local animals.
Stuffed animals and some live turtles. Animals. Yep.
They had turtles and
the
snakes.
The turtle tank was really the showcase.
Oh, yeah. The turtle tank was awesome.
They had some big turtles, some snapping turtles, some little turtles. And they had, the way it was set up was meant to look like a pond, but it was made out of concrete or whatever. But there was a tunnel that kind of went under into the side of the pond, of the tank, that had little windows into the tank that was kid size. So all the kids could go in it and see. It was too small for adults. But that was kind of neat. And yeah. they had a greenhouse.
Greenhouse with all sorts of exotic plants, like banana plants and coffee plants and a lemon tree and pitcher plants.
And carnivorous plants, too.
Yeah, pitcher plants and sundews. Those were cool.
Yeah. There was even a dying fly in one of the pitcher plants.
Oh, it was not dying. It was dead. It was very, very dead.
Yuck.
And then outside they had a great horned owl.
Yeah.
And a hawk
of some species,
which we can remember what
might
it was.
Might have been a Cooper's, might have been. I can actually probably look it up on their website. But yeah. In any case,
it was a hawk. Bella was enamored of the hawk, especially.
Yes. She's been taking an ornithology class. I think we mentioned that. And so she was very excited to get a picture of the hawk to share with her class, which is really neat. So so that's the indoor part. They also have a bunch of walking trails outside through the area. There's swamps and bogs around the main building. And that doesn't cost anything. We could just go and walk.
Right.
And they have a couple of trails. None of them are more than a half mile long. They're not long trails, and they're really easy walking. And one of them even is intended for the blind, the sight impaired.
Yes.
Because it's got a rope and stations with Braille to explain what's around them. They can't see it. I mean, maybe it's for real people who are vision impaired. You're not completely blind. I'm just kind of trying to figure out what. Hey, there's a tree over there that's a big tree that's too far away for you to touch. You know what I mean? But I don't know how that works, so I'm just kind of curious. But it's nice that they have it. But it was kind of nice to go on a walk in the woods on January 31st or February 1st, actually.
It was February 1st.
Was kind of cool. I mean, it wasn't warm, and it was overcast, but it wasn't really cold.
It wasn't bitterly cold, no.
And we saw like some really cool stuff. There was a tree that had split, a huge tree that had split and taken down other trees. And then we saw some of the swamp maples and even a tree that they had taps in, a maple tree. And I'm trying to think of some of the other cool stuff that was in there. There was the places where they, colonial times, they had dug out the gravel pits.
Yeah, like gravel hole. What do they call them?
Oh,
something holes. I don't remember.
Take holes or giving holes or borrow
pits.
Borrow pits, yeah.
Borrow pits. Because they were going to give it back?
Yeah. That's what I thought was funny and memorable, but it was their borrow pits. But, you know, they were using them to dig up gravel to make roads at the time. So, yeah, they weren't bringing it back. But it was a really nice time, and it's really close to us, and there's trails we didn't go down, and then there's even Jacob's Pond, which is across the street, which isn't part of the Natural Science Center, which also has a trail and stuff. So it'll be fun to kind of, it's another place to put on our list of places to go.
Yes.
We were commenting, Boston area has so many small nature places.
Yeah, it does. It's little nature preserves, little nature's
wildlife centers.
Yeah.
The bird place you guys went to last summer, the Daniel Webster Wildlife Sanctuary.
Which is actually like contiguous with several other different wildlife sanctuaries.
Mm.
Some of them run by Audubon and others run by little private foundations.
It's fascinating. Yeah. And all of these little places owned by private nonprofits, not by government agencies, not by the state park system, which those are there too. But it's just, there's something about Massachusetts. I don't know. I mean, maybe other states have it too, but I haven't seen this in other places like this.
You know, I really don't remember seeing a whole bunch of them around in Texas, but maybe I missed them, or maybe they're, some of them popped up. I don't know.
The kids seemed to have a good time once we got them out of the house and fed them at McDonald's in a disastrous lunchtime.
Oh, I've never had such a bad experience at McDonald's. The food was fine when it finally got there.
So
fortunately, it was our food that they messed up, because if they'd messed up the kids' food, that would have been
really disastrous. We use the kiosk. They have those new kiosks, so you can just tap, you know, it's a touchscreen, and you can order on the touchscreen.
Which I like the idea of, because, like, that way you're not relying on a human person who might get your order wrong.
And you're not having to stand there with the kids going, okay, what do you want? What do you want? While the person's standing there tapping their fingers, looking at the person behind you, waiting. In this case, you're just standing at the kiosk, and you just go through each kid and enter it in.
Right.
And they can modify it to their heart's delight, which we did. What happens is when you place your order, you take a table tag and you type it in. So our table number was 48. I tapped in 48, and that's what I had. Problem is, somebody else made a similar order to our, your and mine, Melanie and me, our order, somewhat similar, and also typed in 48, but it was a different order. And in the kitchen, they combined them somehow. They kind of mixed them up. So first they bring up the kids' food, and our food's not there. And she took our table tag and walked away. And I had to go in. I said, you know, is our food coming? I asked someone else. And like, oh, yeah, it's coming. Totally, she didn't know. She was just trying to get rid of me.
She was just saying your food was coming because she assumed that, like...
She assumed it was coming and didn't want to be bothered to go check. So we wait longer. After half an hour, 20 minutes at least, I went and found the same assistant manager, whatever she was, who had brought the food out before. I said, where's the rest of our food? What food? She had taken our receipts, by the way, with her when she took the table tag.
Oh, I thought she took the receipts later when she...
No.
She grabbed the receipt when you asked, where's the food?
Oh, right. That's right. She grabbed the receipts. There was two sheets of paper. There was two different... And remember this. There were two different receipts with two different receipt numbers, but the same table number. I specifically remember this. And that's what she took back with her. And she brought back somebody else's food. You don't like cheese on your burgers. You got a quarter pounder with cheese. I ordered a Big Mac. I got a quarter pounder with cheese and double quarter pounder with cheese and nothing else on it. I'm like, this is not at all yummy to me. This is not what I wanted. Ugh, it was so frustrating. We got a coupon for a free sandwich for our frustration. It's the flaw in the system, which is that whole when they're busy, there's two receipts with the same order number. There's nothing to prevent that from happening. Because the table number is entered by the customer. And if the customer enters the wrong table number, that's going to mess everything up. I don't know what happened to the people whose meal we ate.
I don't know.
I wonder if they got it.
I didn't see anybody who looked like they were looking around for food. But
it could be. The receipt was timed the same time as ours. I looked. They were the same time. So I don't know what that was about. Anyway. But once a part of the problem why the spontaneity was not good was children were hungry. It was right around noon when we went and they hadn't eaten lunch yet. So we had to stop and get them something to eat. So we stopped, got some lunch. Once they were fed, they were happy. Although
mostly.
Although the funny thing is because of scouting, we know we're supposed to bring the six hiking essentials. And one of those essentials is trail food, like a snack, a food to bring with you in case, you know, the implication is if you get lost. And you need food to sustain you till you're found, you have it.
Right. It's emergency rations.
Right. As soon as we're walking, out comes the food. Like, did you not just eat lunch like 20 minutes ago?
I
was still full. They're all munching on their granola bars and stuff.
Yeah, that was pretty funny.
If it's there, it must be eaten. The idea.
Yeah. But that's the problem of giving them trail food that's too yummy.
Yeah. That's why granola was invented, to make trail food that wasn't too yummy.
My granola's yummy.
I know. No, your granola's good. It's the packaged stuff. Anyway, so that was Saturday. It was a lot of fun. We had a good time. And then Sunday, we went to Mass, of course. And before Mass began, the lady who sort of is the sort of the sacristan, I guess she's a sacristan.
She must be. She's officially a Eucharistic minister, but she was probably also a sacristan.
She kind of runs the make sure that the altar gets set up and she makes sure the altar servers are all doing their thing. So it's kind of a sacristan.
Yeah.
Anyway, she comes up to me before Mass and says, by the way, Father would like to talk to you before you leave after Mass. Okay. And I didn't at this point know who was saying Mass. So I'm thinking it's Father Michael.
Yeah. At first I thought it was Father Michael. When I saw who it was, I was pretty sure what it was about.
Well, then I saw him. The priest was actually celebrating Mass, and I was still uncertain. I thought, is it maybe Father Michael's out there, like that Father Michael wants to talk to us and he's out in the sacristy? Like, I didn't know. And so I'm sitting there going, like, the whole time I'm thinking, did I do something wrong? Is he going to ask me to do something I don't want to do? Did the kids do something wrong? You know, Bella and Ben were serving at Mass. So did they mess up in the sacristy? I'm thinking, worst case, the whole Mass, I'm thinking, what is going on? But at the end of Mass, he came up to us and he had another couple in tow. Were they the parents of the other altar servers?
Maybe.
We're apparently
sure.
The only two couples with kids who go to this Mass.
I got the sense that they had older kids or something. I wasn't sure. actually.
So they are, the priest is not, wasn't one of our parish priests. He's a priest from the,
Holy Cross.
Holy Cross Fathers in Easton, Mass. Northeastern? Stonehill? I forget.
Stonehill College.
At Stonehill College. But they're at the Museum of Family Prayer. There's a family life apostle, the Father Peyton famous group. And, you know, who are all about promoting family prayer. And they have this thing called the Museum of Family Prayer, which is supposed to be kind of cool. And they keep inviting us to go. They're having a special mass on February 16th, I think.
It was a Valentine's Day mass. I looked at the...
Oh, okay.
The sort of... It's Valentine's Day, so we're inviting some couples to come and renew their vows.
With their kids.
With their kids. And so they'll have a special mass, and then...
Renewal of vows, and then a dinner.
And dinner afterwards.
And it's very nice. I really, in fact, in an ideal situation, it would be nice to go and to do something like that.
Right.
But
I'm looking at the logistics.
The logistics.
Oh, my goodness.
So, realistically, several of our children take very seriously the idea of fasting before mass. They will not eat anything until after mass, which, hey, that's awesome.
Right.
And I mean, and the problem is if we go to a later mass, they're still doing it. Like, I'm not sure what would happen if we went to like an evening mass.
It might be difficult.
Yeah. We'd have to cajole them to eat something. You know, that would be.
Also, some of our children are very reluctant to step out of their routine. Witness what happened on Saturday when spontaneity.
Yes. So that's also another break in the routine, which, yeah, it would be, again, problematic.
So a later mass, starting 11:30? 11?
Realistically doesn't get over till probably 1. Probably not going to eat lunch until, like, if the mass gets over at, say, even 12:30, you're not going to eat anything until an hour later. You know what I mean? It's just not going to happen.
There's transitions milling around
with
serving
events,
food.
We're talking like 1:30 probably at the earliest, probably eating lunch. We've got starving kids who haven't eaten, even if they've eaten breakfast, if we got them to eat breakfast before we left, now it's really late. Then we have the other problem of what about the kids who won't or can't eat strange food? And by strange, I mean very common, very good food that this is not on their menu.
But the fact
menu.
Is, we wouldn't have a menu in advance to know what they were feeding us.
So we have the Lucy allergy problem.
Right.
And then we have the other children who just have very particular preferences to what... Right. Like, I know a lot of kids, most kids have preference issues. But we have one or two who are a step above that.
Yeah.
That at least one other one besides Lucy who has very strict personal preferences that almost rise almost to the level of almost like an allergy, like will not eat things.
Right.
And we have to be careful about pushing too much. I don't want to get into it and say too much, about it because I don't want to expose the child to public. It's private, you know, in the details of it. But in any case, it becomes an issue when we're going to go to something like this where we cannot plan in advance and we can't even be sure we could bring food with us.
And yeah. And even the children who don't have specific issues would be kind of like, so what are we going to be eating? Do you know what we're going to be? You don't know what we're going to be eating.
That's every kid.
I know, but.
But yeah, there would be the normal worry on the part of the other kids, too.
But times five. It's just.
Times five. So it's just so much. In other words, there's so much hassle involved in it. I think we're going to have to decline. And this wasn't like a personal invitation. I didn't feel like, hey, we should invite the Bettinelli family because we know them. This was you're one of the only two families who go to this mass that have kids, that we know have kids. You know what I mean? Like, there's two families that go to this mass that have kids.
Right.
We were there and we had children and therefore we were invited. So I don't feel like I'm turning down a personal invitation.
I got the feeling that actually Father wasn't himself going to be there because he was leaving the country.
Yeah, he said something about he's going away for something. So make sure to RSVP to the address on the invitation he handed us.
So it was very nice and flattering to be invited, but...
Yeah, I'm going to have to decline and not feel bad about it.
Yeah.
It's just the longer... Plus, you know, introvert things.
Yeah. we're not exactly best poster children for...
At least one of us is an introvert. Mm. Not me. I do podcasts.
Introverts do podcasts.
Yes, that's true. Introverts don't have to be cajoled to do the podcast. or extroverts don't have to be cajoled. Anyway, so that was the Sunday. So another interesting thing that happened was the kids had me recall a story that I wanted to share. A remembrance. So we were talking about, I entered some online Disney family movie insider, Disney movie insider contest to win a trip for a family for to go to Star Wars Galaxy's Edge at Disney World, which, you know, there are all kinds of issues about going to Disney World. But if I could go to Galaxy's Edge and ride in the Millennium Falcon, all those issues are solved on my part.
Okay.
Yes, I'm there. Yeah, I know. Family of four. Three of you can stay home, but the rest of us are going. No. We'd find a way to all go. But as we were talking about it, I told the kids, they're like, oh, it must be impossible to win, blah, blah, blah. Like, the odds are against you. We're probably not going to win. That's just, you know, it's almost certain. However, I have won a Disney sweepstakes, online sweepstakes before. And they were like, what? What is this story? Back in 1998, in the early days of the internet, I entered
very early days of the internet.
Yes. I entered an online sweepstakes on the Disney website to win. Like, the grand prize was a Buick. I'm pretty sure it was like some Buick and a family trip to Disney World. That was the grand prize. The first prize was one of the very, very first brand new Bondi Blue IMAX from Apple. And then there was a bunch of other prizes like t-shirts and stuff like that. I won first prize. I won a brand new iMac.
Of course you won the computer.
Of course. Oh, unfortunately, I had a better computer at the time. But still, I was so excited. Like, I'd never won anything like that before. I mean, I got the call. At first, I didn't believe it. I'm like, are you serious? Oh, yes, this is really, you know, it's Tammy from Disney. I don't know what her name is. But I'm like, wow, this is really. Then I got the letter in the mail and I had to sign it and acknowledge that I was going to receive this and send it back. And then eventually this big box showed up with an iMac inside. It was really cool.
So what did you do with the iMac?
I kept it and played with it for a while. And then I eventually gave it first to my brother John for his family. And then when he didn't need it, he passed it on with my to Evie, my sister, uh-huh. Evie, who had it for many years. They used it for work and for the kids. They eventually passed it back to me. I think it's actually still in the shed. It might actually still be in the shed.
Oh, my. We have this collection of old computers. We have a lot of them.
Well, I've managed to get rid of some, but yes. Some. The problem is you can't just throw them in the trash. And I can't find a recycler local, like a computer recycler. So
everybody wants you to pay money to take your computer away from you.
So Apple has a recycling program. I know. I'll have to look more into it. I just haven't been motivated to. But the other iMac that's disintegrating in the van as the children step on it on a daily basis.
Yeah, it's a problem.
It's a problem. They broke that one. That's another story.
It is. Yeah.
But anyway, that's the time I won an iMac from the Walt Disney Corporation.
Woo-hoo.
That was pretty cool. Kind of wish I'd won the Buick and the trip to Disney World, but maybe now is my time. This is going to be my time.
Uh-huh.
Yeah.
Right. I'm holding my breath.
I would love to go to Galaxy's Edge. I really would. It's like Galaxy's Edge and going to Matamata in New Zealand to see Hobbiton.
Uh-huh.
Those are right there.
We are so very different.
Oh my gosh. If I ever got the chance to go to Matamata, that's the Hobbiton movie set from the Lord of the Rings and the Hobbit movies that they've made into this real place that you can visit and see.
Mm-hmm.
Oh my gosh. I would have tears.
I'll go hang out with Jocelyn and her family while you do
that.
You
can hang out with Jocelyn, our friend from New Zealand. I'm going to Matamata.
Uh-huh.
Anyway. So that's the time I got an iMac. We should talk about what are we learning about, Melanie? We've learned some presidential history today.
Oh, my goodness. That was the craziest thing ever. Okay, this was not a stellar parenting moment. Let me just preface this with that. One of my Facebook friends shared the funniest thing that I just had to read to the kids. It was so funny. It was a blog post. I can't even describe it. You'll have to describe it because I'm just going to lose it.
So some guy on Reddit and Reddit is great for this sort of thing, came up with this scenario. And then, as you do, he talked it out. He thought it out.
It might
out,
not have
out,
even like, been this.
Or someone his, else has someone else had a similar scenario.
Yeah. And he like went
he
with
expanded it.
It. Something like
so
that.
The question the question that started it. What's one of these questions like you in the past when I was younger? Your college buddies, you'd be sitting around having some beers on a Saturday night, and someone would go, you know, in a battle between all of the presidents, which one would win in a knife fight? And then you'd spend the next couple hours with your friends debating the different presidents and their qualities. So this guy kind of did that. He said, in right. a free-for-all knife fight between all of the presidents, the U.S. presidents, who would win? How would they rank? Who would die first and who would reign supreme? And so this guy went through. First, he set the standards. They would each be at their peak physical condition from their lifetime. So not like when they're old and feeble, but at their peak physical moment. But if they had any chronic ailments or diseases, like FDR having polio and being in a wheelchair, they would still be subject to that.
Right.
And he even specified that the knife is the knife that is issued to Army Special Forces soldiers upon graduation from Special Forces training. So yes. They're all equally armed.
And he went on to specify like the arena and the conditions and everything. And yes. Oh, and he gave FDR a wheelchair, a motorized wheelchair, a really spiffy one,
just to kind of give him a little leg up so that he isn't necessarily the first one to die in the knife fight. It was really funny, but like the kids were a little baffled as we read this. This is like homeschooling, not really our high point, but. Like things like, of course, he referred to the Holy Trinity, the three that would survive to the final three would be Andrew Jackson, because he's just kind of crazy. And, you know, he's a guy, he's called Old Hickory because he carried a hickory club that he claimed was a cane and once beat a man within an inch of his life.
Not to mention that he had fought like three duels during his lifetime. I mean, the man
could fight. He was ready to go. Abraham Lincoln, because he's tall, he's got the reach. In a knife fight, reach is almost everything. And he wrestling and, you know, physical conditioning.
Right. He was scrappy.
And, of course, the guy who would win it all. We all acknowledge.
We all know this.
Teddy Roosevelt.
Of course.
This is the guy who got shot at the beginning of a speech and gave the whole speech with a bullet wound.
So the fun thing was that as I'm reading this, and I'm just cracking up,
it goes through each president from George Washington to Donald Trump.
So the fun thing was, though, that Isabella really likes the presidents. We had a series of like
a trading cards, president
cards?
Yeah,
like playing cards, not playing cards, but, you know, cards.
Like flashcards of presidents with the facts.
And they would play. I mean, the girls would go through these and
they'd
like quiz each other. Like, can you identify the president just by looking? And then they would read the facts and they'd
identify them by the fact that they proposed.
Right. I mean, yeah. Our kids are actually really good at like actually using those
flashcards
for their intended purpose.
Yes.
And sometimes not for the intended purpose. Like they will sometimes create crazy, wild and crazy games with them.
But they're pretty good at they use the Star Wars books the same way. They'll name one random fact from a character page and they'll like, oh, that's so-and-so, some obscure character. I mean, right. they're really good at doing that. So she really loves the presidents. And so she was really getting into this.
Right. She's like, she knows who all the presidents are.
She's like, oh, yeah, Buchanan would be one of the first to go. They hated Buchanan for starting the Civil War.
Right. I mean, she was really getting into it. It was funny. Like she knows her presidents.
Oh, my gosh. Then, there were some really funny ones. Was it Chester Arthur? No, Garfield. Garfield would when he went because he was the big fat one.
I thought that was Taft.
Taft, yes, Taft. When he went, they'd use him as a low wall or a hill to stand on. I mean, it was very dark humor, very morbid, and kind of funny. But
yeah, if you don't like dark humor, I'm sorry.
We probably just offended you, but. Yeah.
But I have a taste for the macabre and the grim. And like I said, probably
you
not
like Edward Gorey.
Not a stellar parenting moment, but
it was really kind of funny.
But it was our evening amusement.
Yes. That and our 80s dance party during the dinner preparation.
Yes.
Lucy said something about she had a magic ring and so she has the power, and that kind of got me that old 80s dance tune, I Got the Power.
Which I'm wondering, does that have anything to do with like the He-Man TV show?
I don't think it does.
I got the power. By the power of Grayskull.
If I had my act together, I would play a clip of it right here, but I'm not sure I do. But if you hear a clip right here, then I got my act together before putting the show out. But in any case, that sent me to Apple Music, and they have an 80s Essentials playlist of all 80s music. And of course, I started playing that. And an 80s dance party broke out in the kitchen. All the kids came in and everyone was dancing. And I got minutes on my Apple Watch exercise band. So, I mean, I was breaking a move or a hip or something. It was
something. It was something.
Anyway.
Yeah.
If you want to have some fun with you, it's sort of family. It's in your family culture. If it's in your family culture to have a spontaneous dance party, I mean, that's a lot of fun, and it's fun to do it just to put on some fun music while you're making dinner and just all start dancing and having fun with it. That's fun.
And we are not good dancers here.
Oh no.
This is like bad dancing.
Yes. I mean, I was doing the bite my lower lip, you know, guy in the club thing, you know, I mean, it was a sight to see. It was not good.
It was a travesty.
Yeah. It was a travesty of dance. So let's talk about what we've been cooking. All right, so I had one success and one failure this week. Yes. This a dish I've been meaning to make for a while that where did I get that dish from? It was either Cooks Illustrated or Milk Street Kitchen. That's where I get most of my recipe ideas these days. But it was called Mapo Tofu, which is a Chinese dish of basically braised beef and tofu. Szechuan braised beef. It's from Cooks Illustrated.
Okay.
I'd gotten a lot of the exotic ingredients a while ago from Amazon. I got them online when I've been wanting to make this. And there was a couple of things I didn't have. And then I went to say, okay, this Sunday, I'm going to make it Sunday afternoon. Boom. That's what I'm going to do. And I realized I still didn't have the Szechuan peppercorns. I said, maybe Whole Foods would have it. I went out to Whole Foods. They did not have Szechuan peppercorns, but the recipe had suggested the substitution of Korean chili flakes.
Okay.
So I made it. And if something could be both very spicy and bland at the same time, that kind of describes it.
That's a really weird description.
Yeah. I think it could have been better, and maybe the Szechuan peppercorns would have made the difference. But I had some for lunch today because I was hoping maybe overnight in the fridge would help the flavors come out a little more. It did a little bit, but not enough. I mean, I added some of that chili oil with crunchy garlic that I like.
Uh-huh.
That helped a little bit, but yeah, it wasn't good. It wasn't great. You know, I'm glad I tried it. I'd wanted to make it for a while. I'm glad I did. But I probably won't make that again. Especially given the number of ingredients and things. It was very simple. I mean,
and the fact that nobody else liked it either.
And nobody else liked it. Now I have to find a use for broad bean chili paste, fermented black beans, and Szechuan chili powder. Probably not all in one dish either. But, well, I'll find something. So that's the not so great result. But the success is something I've been working on for years and years, which is pancakes. I've mentioned before that I make pancakes Sunday morning, I think.
I'm pretty sure we've talked about pancakes.
Most Sunday mornings I make pancakes. And I've been doing this for 10 years, probably. And I developed a recipe based off of things I've seen in Joy Cooking, Alton Brown, Cooks Illustrated. I've kind of worked things together. But I've always wanted to make them fluffier. Like when you go to the restaurant, the restaurant pancakes are always much thicker than mine were, but they're always tougher too. They're really chewy.
Yeah, I'm not actually a huge fan of restaurant pancakes.
And neither am I, except for the fluffiness. I like that airiness, and I felt like if I could get some more airiness or fluffiness into the pancake, it would be that much better. I think I've finally found it, which is the big difference is the addition of more baking powder, so basically twice the baking powder that the recipe originally called for.
That's a lot of baking powder.
It is. And a quarter teaspoon of baking soda.
Okay.
That was enough to really bump it up. And the other thing is in order to keep your pancakes from getting tough, to keep it nice and tender, is most people overbeat it. And that's why restaurant pancakes are so tough, is they're just going for speed and efficiency, and they just beat the heck out of it to get the ingredients mixed together. The way I did it is like the way is Alton Brown method, which is he mixes the liquid into the dry ingredients, and then using a spatula stirs gently, almost like you're folding in egg whites.
Right. Folding.
And no more than 50 times. Like literally 25 times, turn the bowl 25 times, done. Walk away. Sometimes I do it less if I feel like it's already mixed in.
Okay.
That's a big difference.
Count. I'm not a big counting.
Oh, I always count. Because then the kids talk to me and I'm like, shh.
Counting. Don't talk. Counting.
28, 29. Shh.
And then, you should, me too.
Yeah, I do.
You do?
When, I don't want to lose count. You know what happens when you lose count?
Very important.
You get crunchy rice. We talked about that last week. And then you got to let it sit for a little bit because you got to let the baking powder start working and expanding.
Stop
creating gas.
Yeah.
And the kids loved it. They came out really good. So that's my trick. Woo-hoo. That's success. We haven't had whole wheat flour for a while, so I've been just using all purpose flour.
Right.
So, did we talk about the rancid whole wheat flour that we got to stop at shop?
I don't think we did. I bought whole wheat flour. I went to open it and I was making
muffins or something.
I don't even remember, bread.
Yeah.
And
it kind of smelled.
Oh no, it didn't just kind of smell.
Yeah.
It smelled
weird.
It smelled not like
rancid flour.
It smelled almost like machine grease. Like it had a very sort of mechanical, greasy,
plasticky
smell.
Yeah.
Like not something that you find in nature smell. So I slapped a piece of tape on it and I took it back. And our grocery store is great. They were just like, oh, it doesn't smell good. I'm not even going to try to smell it. Here's your money back.
Right.
Very nice. Then I went to the aisle to get some more. And I'm being cautious because, you know, if one bag smells, maybe the other bag smells, especially with a weird smell like that.
Mm-hmm.
And I picked up the next bag and it smelled bad. And I picked up another bag and it smelled. And so I was like, they only had one brand of whole wheat flour too on the shelf. I've been a little disappointed because they've gotten rid of all the other brands except the store brand of whole wheat flour. They got a billion other kinds of flour.
From a billion other different.
Like. You can have quinoa flour and almond flour and rice flour and barley flour and just about every kind of flour you want, except only one brand of whole wheat flour.
Right. You can have King Arthur all-purpose. You can have
King Arthur bread flour and King Arthur.
And whatever other brands, Bob's Red Mill and all that sort of stuff.
Anyway.
But yeah, but you went and told them about the bad whole wheat.
I told them, you know, unfortunately, the same lady was at the customer service and I just said, I went to go replace the flour, whole wheat flour, and all the bags on the shelf smell really bad to me. So you just kind of might want to have somebody look at that. I hopefully they'll just take my word for it and take them off the shelf, because I really don't want to have the repeat where I go back week after week after week and there's the same bags of gross flour that I don't want to buy, but they don't get any new ones because it's not leaving the shelf.
Right.
Or, you know, have some poor person who like buys it and doesn't smell it and like bakes something and makes himself sick.
That would be bad.
Which would be bad. I'd feel bad.
Yes, you should feel bad.
Even though I have nothing to do with
you,
it.
You have nothing to do with it. Guilt is guilt. Anyway. So let's talk about what we've been reading and watching. So you've been reading Tom Sawyer to the kids. We mentioned before that you're starting it. You're about most of the way through?
Oh, about a little more than halfway through.
So how's that going?
It's fun. I really like Tom Sawyer. So we just got through the very moving scene where Tom and his friends run off to go play pirate. He's a little bit aggrieved with his Aunt Polly, and his friend Joe Harper is a little aggrieved with his mom. And Huck Finn is always up for any adventure because he doesn't have a family. And so they go off to play pirates and they stay overnight on the island. And then Tom starts to feel bad. They all start to feel homesick. But Tom goes home in the middle of the night to leave a note for Aunt Polly to say, I'm okay. We're just playing pirates and we'll be back soon. And he sneaks into the house and he hears them talking and they're planning the funeral. And he just can't help it. He gets this idea in his head of like, wouldn't it be fun to go to our own funeral? And so he doesn't leave a note for Aunt Polly, and he goes back to the island, and the boys like hold out for another night, and they're all homesick and they really want to go home, but oh man, to get to go to your own funeral, like who could resist? Not Tom Sawyer. It's hilarious. I mean, it's really funny. And yet what I really like is that Mark Twain also gives a really nice little, what do you call it? I'm looking for a word. Kind of a window into the workings of their conscience, because like their consciences eat at them. They know that their like family is missing them. They know what's wrong and they wrestle with it. And Tom, you know, his mischievous streak gets the better of him, but then he feels bad about it afterward. And Aunt Polly's like, how could you let me suffer so? And he's like, oh, but I did think about you and I did write you a note. I just didn't leave it because like I really wanted to go see my funeral. And she doesn't believe him. She thinks he's lying about leaving the note. And she ends up going and looking in his pocket and finds the note there and realizes that he wasn't lying and he does love her and he did think about her and he's really not such a bad boy after all. It's just really sweet. I you know, remember reading this years and years and years ago, and I mostly remembered the Injun Joe's cave and the whitewashing the fence, and I had forgotten a lot of the parts that are really good.
There's a reason this is one of the great American novels.
Right. Now, the one thing that I feel like my kids just really aren't connecting with at all, though, is how much, like, boy-girl crushes stuff there goes on. Tom and Becky Thatcher and, like,
our kids are pretty sheltered.
Falling in love with her and going head over heels and, like, getting engaged to her and then breaking off the engagement and all of that stuff. And the kids are kind of, like, befuddled, like, why are they saying they're engaged? They're just kids. What are they talking about? What are they doing? What is this?
Homeschool kids.
Yeah. So,
which in one sense is fine. I'm
although actually, honestly, at their age, even going to school, I would have thought that this was all very silly because I thought that when my peers did the whole "we're engaged, we're in love," blah blah blah, as kids,
but nowadays it's worse. It's worse, even worse than it's not engaged. It's other stuff. Yeah. I'm happy for them to be a bit sheltered at this point in their lives, frankly.
Anyway, Tom Sawyer is really fun. I don't think we're going to read Huck Finn, although I might assign it to Isabella next year for school.
As a read aloud. Yeah.
Yeah, Huck Finn is not really a read aloud book.
Yeah.
Not for
they'll each read kids. It in turn as they in their teens, but not at Lucy and Anthony's age.
Right. Honestly, I taught Huck Finn to college students when I was still teaching college.
I think it's a mistake that people make is, oh, Tom Sawyer and Huck Finn, they're the same kind of book. They're the same, but they're really not.
Right. And even Tom Sawyer, it's kind of a kid's book, but it's kind of not. And actually that reminds me of an article that I was reading that was about Wind in the Willows this week.
Yeah. Not being a kid's
which
book.
Is also Wind in the Willows, not really a kid's book. There is a lot of really, really good classic literature that we tend to think of as children's lit, but it's kind of not. Like it's a lot deeper. And while it was sort of written with kids in mind, it was also not really written with kids in mind. And speaking as much to the adult reader as it is to the child reader, there's a certain level of which it's really speaking over the heads of the kids. And the kids might enjoy like a surface level of the story and the adventure. And that's fine. I mean, I don't think there's anything wrong with reading them to kids, but when you read them as an adult, you're like, okay, I missed a whole bunch of stuff in this story when I was...
Isn't that the way with a lot of, like, say, Pixar movies, too? That there's a kid level, which they can enjoy it, but there's also a level for the parents or the adults.
Right. Well, and I would argue that, in fact, any decent literature for kids, like, if it's really worth kids reading, should also be worth adults reading,
like
too.
Chronicles of Narnia.
Right. If adults think it's dumb and stupid and don't want to spend time with it, then why the heck are you giving it to kids? Because that's really selling kids short.
It goes with kids' movies, kids' books, kids' music. If it's too dumb for adults, then don't saddle your kids with it.
Anyway, so that's been fun. And Isabella's trying to read more Shakespeare. Right now, she and Sophia are just completely in love with the William Shakespeare Star Wars series and reading them aloud. Their favorite game is to read random quotes at each other and try to guess who said them. But the fun thing is that it's actually leading her to want to memorize scenes when she's working on memorizing some of the scenes, but it's also leading her to want to read real Shakespeare.
Very good.
In fact, she brought me her Kindle today because I had got her maybe a freebie or maybe a really cheap version of Two Gentlemen of Verona. And the text was really bad. Like it had all the apostrophes were question marks.
Oh, something. Yeah. The encoding was messed up.
Yeah. Something was messed up. And she was like, this is not good.
You got her a better one.
I got her a better one.
That's good. That's good.
Yeah. Paid a little bit of money to get the good Folgers one.
Yeah. So I finally finished Brandon Sanderson's book 3 of his Stormlight archive called Oathbringer. And I don't think there's anybody out there who is as good at world building right now as Brandon Sanderson. I'm not that I've read everything, but his world building is phenomenal. It's amazing. It's detailed. It's intense. It covers everything imaginable he's thought out. And the world that he inhabits is really feels real. I love authors who build worlds. That's one of my favorite things in both books and in movies and TV shows is when the world feels real and thought out. But the story itself, the characters, the plot are really good. Like twists and turns, and just when you think all is lost, and how could it possibly get any worse? There's no way that we can come out of this. And then something happens, and then all the tables are turned, and everything is the hero's defining good point becomes the bad his weakness, and his weakness becomes his strength. And I mean, just these amazing twists and turns. It's really good. I heard that it's actually been optioned for a TV show. I don't know how, like, unless you make this on the level of Game of Thrones.
Maybe that's what they're planning.
Maybe they do. But I mean, this would be really hard to do. But it's such an amazing book. It's just so long. The books are all so, like, it took me a month to read it. It usually doesn't take me that long to read them. So really good. Highly recommend it. The book 4 is going to come out this summer. That's pre-announced for summer. So I'll be looking forward to that. And then I've moved on to another book, and I'll talk about that next time. The other things, I watched 2 movies this week. I rewatched the original Thor, which was fun. Having Thor Ragnarok, you haven't watched any of these.
So. I haven't watched any of them.
And so one of our projects is to share with you the highlights of the Marvel Cinematic Universe.
Yeah.
We'll hit the better movies.
The short versions.
Well, so the first Thor is good. The Thor Dark World, which was the second Thor movie, was bad. It might be the worst of the Marvel movies. It just wasn't really that good. And then Thor Ragnarok might be one of the best of the Marvel movies. It was funny. Taika Waititi was the director, and who has turned out to be an amazing comedic director, but comedic with other genres. Anyway, and then and Chris Hemsworth being able to be funny because he's really a funny guy and do action at the same time. Really great. So that was fun to watch Thor again and to see how that all began. And especially since I had just read that night the Norse tales to the kids of the bedtime story,
uh-huh,
including the Jotuns and Jotunheim. Those were all in the movie, by the way. The Jotuns and the Jotunheim and all that. So that was kind of fun. Then I watched Bumblebee, which is a Transformer prequel. It's featuring the character Bumblebee, the most likable of all of the Transformers. And let me tell you, it was probably one of the best of the Transformer movies. The Transformer movies have become almost unwatchable. Just the amount of stuff happening on screen is really hard to kind of make out what's going on as the robots fight with each other. It's just the stories are kind of a mess. But this was a much smaller story, a little predictable. I could tell you ahead of time how everything was going to work out, pretty much. But it's
a Transformer movie.
It's a Transformer.
You don't expect like originality from that, right?
But it was a movie sort of aimed at. This is a teen coming of age movie, really. But nevertheless, it was fun of its time. It was set in the 80s. It was okay. It was an okay movie. So I'll give it a thumbs up on that. And the only other thing is from our entertainment world was we had the finale, the series finale of the TV show The Good Place. We kind of talked about the penultimate episode last time, and so they had the finale, and they had this spoilers. If you don't want to be spoiled, skip ahead 5 minutes. But the final episode was them in heaven, and each of the major characters that we've been following goes through this process. We talked about that they redesigned heaven to include an oblivion door, where when you get tired of heaven, when you're completely fulfilled and you've done all the things you want to do, there's nothing left to accomplish in heaven. You walk through the door and you just become one with the universe, or just dissolve or cease to exist permanently. And each of the characters goes through this moment, and it was kind of weird because I was thinking about it, like from a purely human standpoint, I could see someone thinking, yeah, after a while, I mean, sure, it would take thousands and thousands and maybe millions of years to do everything there is to do. But eventually you would do it all. And then what? And then I would want oblivion. I'd want to end it all. I'd be fulfilled and I would move on. And as each of the characters do this, it was kind of weird to think how they were doing this happy, that they were sort of fulfilled and complete. And that was that. I want to cease to exist now. It was kind of weird. And so from a Catholic point of view, you know, it's like, no, see, this is the problem, is you don't have God. In God, there is never, even after a million years, you're only just getting to know him and everyone else. This unplumbable depth. And that's the real difference. And that's one of the things that The Good Place really misses when it comes to its depiction of the afterlife. So anyway, I know you can get a chance to watch the series. So it's not a,
I haven't watched the series, and partly because, like, I don't know, I'm one of those people who I would have trouble getting past the big red flags blazing in front of my eyes saying this is not what the afterlife is like. And the theology entire is all premise. Wrong.
Right.
I mean, what I really like about, I like fiction that gets as close as possible to a worldview, even when the writer is not Catholic or not even Christian, when it approaches something that feels true, even if they get some things wrong. So I'm reading the Dresden Files, and I really feel like they get a lot of the stuff about free will dead right. And what I like about it is, so it's a first person narrator, and he himself is pretty much agnostic. Like he acknowledges that the people who call on God have some sort of power that answers them, that he can see the effects of in his world, his magical world, mm-hmm. that there's something called faith and it has actual effectiveness in the world. It stops the bad guys and he can see it, like its effects. But he personally feels like I've done bad things and God couldn't possibly love me or have anything to do with me. He would cast me into the outer darkness. So he's got this, like, even though he's a good guy doing, you know, making the best choices he can possibly make. And even though his best friend at one point is a good Catholic warrior who wields a sword that has one of the nails from the true cross in it. So he's like mm-hmm. on the side of good. Harry himself makes what he knows are morally compromised choices. But what I like about the series is that it really wrestles with those moral conundrums, the moral qualities, and it leaves a sort of an open-ended question. I mean, the series isn't done yet, but it's an open-ended question. Like, there is room in this universe for God to be real, for the angels and the powers of good to be real, and Harry just to be kind of dumbly ignoring that reality. So that's the sort of fiction that appeals to me, whereas there's room for what I believe to be part of the worldview, even if the author himself and the character himself doesn't entirely buy it. And I'm not sure that Jim Butcher is Christian or really buys it, but there's sort of room in the plot for it to be true.
Right. Just like in Stephen Sterling's The Changeverse series, at least the earlier half a dozen books. If there's that room for Christianity, and for people to be authentically Christian, people to be Christian without being caricatured.
Right. And I feel like the Christians, while some of the details get a little bit off,
yeah.
At one point he goes into the Catholic priest's bedroom and he's got the King James Bible on his bed. And I'm like, oh, no, he does. The Catholic priest would not have the King James Bible. That's just wrong.
Right.
And there's a few things like that where he gets it wrong. But in general, he has one specific Catholic church in Chicago that's a real church. It's really there in Chicago. And he goes there repeatedly. And he has these conversations where he wrestles with God. He talks to the priest. He trusts the priest and likes the priest. And the priest trusts him. And I feel like, in general, the priest character is really, really believable as a Catholic priest. Except for the fact that he is reading the King James Bible, which just, no.
Right.
But I can forgive Butcher for getting little details like that, right? Because I feel like, in general, the conversations that they have really feel substantive and true.
Okay.
Like, the moral questions have real moral weight. And when Harry makes bad calls, there are real world consequences, and people really suffer badly when he goes off the rails. And I like that. I like that moral realism in my fiction.
Yeah.
That's what floats my boat.
Yeah. I mean, Good Place is first and foremost a comedy. It's,
right.
But it's a smart comedy. I have to, in its defense, say that it is, you know, it's more about philosophical truths in approaching things from philosophy than religion.
Right.
And a philosophical approach to what an afterlife would be. There is actually a funny scene where, you know, the one character who's a philosophy professor is finding out who else is in heaven. And, you know, he finds out that Socrates and Plato are in the bad place because they were in favor of slavery. But you got to nuance that because it's different. Slavery was different back then. But then he finds out, but St. Thomas Aquinas is in the good place. He's like, yes, woohoo. My boy, Tommy. But
he's a saint. So of course he's in a good place.
Well, but there's no God in this conception of it's a non-religious view of the afterlife. It's a philosophical afterlife.
Right.
And it's interesting to explore that. Okay, this is wrong. I still find it interesting to explore that, especially from a comedic point of view. So it's refreshing. Hey, I mean, this is a discussion of philosophy on primetime television in a popular television show. I mean, I'm in favor of that, frankly. So I did like that. All right. I do want to read a bit of feedback we got. We got a nice review on Apple Podcasts. And if you would like to review our podcast on the Apple Podcast Directory, any podcast directory that allows you to do reviews, we would greatly appreciate that. Your reviews help goose the algorithm and get our podcast in front of more folks. So we really do appreciate when you write a review of any length.
Yes.
And this one is from, it's an acronym. So I think it's Mom to EKMPM. I think it's all the letters are run together.
I'm guessing initials of various children.
Probably. Anyway, she writes, I look forward to hearing the Bets adventures each week. Our family of five were also homeschoolers, active in the scouting movement, raising all of them in the faith. Thank you, Dom and Melanie, for sharing your adventures. Sometimes I learn a great new recipe to share, find new things to watch, read, and visit. May your years with your children be at least as blessed as ours has been.
Well, that's very nice.
Yes, very nice. Thank you very much. We really do appreciate it. We love to hear from listeners and people who enjoy the show, so that we doesn't feel like we're just talking into microphones to ourselves.
Feels like we're talking to microphones.
Of course it does. But we do love it when people respond. Yes. And let us know that you're listening and what you like and what you want to suggest to us for shows or books or recipes or anything. We'd love to hear from you. So reach out. I do want to, before we finish, take a moment to thank our patrons who make it possible for us to create Raising the Bets, including Laura M., John, Maximilian S., Austin K., and Tom C. Their generous donations at sqpn.com/give make it possible for us to continue Raising the Bets and all the shows at StarQuest. You can join them by visiting sqpn.com/give. So if you'd like to contact us, you can do so by commenting at sqpn.com/bets, BETTS, or the SQPN Facebook page, facebook.com/StarQuestMedia, or you can send us an email to bets@sqpn.com. And any links to anything we've discussed that has a link will be in our show notes on sqpn.com. And until next time, I'm Dom Bettinelli.
And I'm Melanie Bettinelli.
Thank you for listening to Raising the Bets on StarQuest.